This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Are you looking for a summer adventure from the comfort of your own couch? You can take a break from the heat in the pages of a good book. Joining me now to share some summer book recommendations and offer tips on how to read more and read more deeply are the Mercantile Library book advisor, Hillary Copsey. Welcome back, Hillary.
Hi, Lucy. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. And Downbound Books owner, Gregory Kornbluth. Thanks for being here, Greg.
Thank you, Lucy. It's good to be here.
Great to have you both. So many of us have summer reading goals. I recently found out there are super readers, which I didn't know if I could feel worse about myself, but now I do. Thanks, super readers. People whose book count can number in the hundreds a year. Do either of you have a reading goal this year? Is there a number you're trying to hit?
I always shoot for like 100, but that's really, it's arbitrary, you know? It's just basically to keep me on track and to, you know, keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Greg?
I've never really had a count goal. And that the thing you said about super reading making you feel worse, that's part of why. Like, mm-hmm. I think that there are so many things that let us kind of compare ourselves and feel bad. And I hate to make reading one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be fun and joyful and important. What do you, you know, most of us aren't super readers. Maybe we don't even want to be, but we want to learn some tips from people who really are into books in that way. What are some of the ways we could all read more than we do now?
So whenever somebody asks me about this, I never really know what to say because reading is just something I do. It's part of who I am. But the real trick, I think, is to just always have a book, many books, always have books around you, with you, a never-ending to-be-read list. You know, it's you're never going to get to all of them, but just having a wide variety to choose from, I think, is half the battle.
Yeah. What do you think, Craig?
Well, I do have tips because I have a lot that I have to read and there are a lot that I want to read. And so I have over the years developed some ways to kind of make sure I can stay on track with them and read more. And they're pretty basic things. Like if I am reading a book that I find that I'm not loving, that is not making me excited, I stop reading that book.
Wow. Yes. How much time do you give it? Like how many, you have a page count that you have to, like, do you have to get to page 50 before you decide?
No. You know, I've stopped books hundreds of pages in if I feel like it's just keeping me from reading because there is just always that big stack on the other side of the room. And if I see that I'm bogged down in one, maybe I've just read a chapter and it's not grabbing me. There's just so much good stuff out there. Rarely is there something that I have to read and I just kind of don't want to spend time on things that I'm not excited about reading. And I read a lot more because I don't give the time to things that are not pulling me in.
That's it. If you're not excited about it, put it down because something else will be there.
That's good to hear because I just had this debate with a loved one on the Facebook the other day. Like, can I quit this book? Should I feel guilty about stopping this book that's not grabbing me? So that's good. I told her life's too short. Don't read a book that you're not enjoying. There's no, unless you're getting paid for it.
I mean, there are different reasons to read too,
yep.
Right? So some books we're reading because there's something in it that we feel we have to learn. And that's a different kind of thing. But if you're reading for pleasure and the book isn't enjoyable, get rid of it.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about how to read more and how to read more deeply, and we're getting summer book recommendations. Are you reading something you'd like to recommend? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Do audiobooks count? Do you count that as reading a book? Okay,
yes.
I'm getting good.
Yeah.
That makes me feel better too.
Yes,
good.
And some books are just better on audio. Mm-hmm. Like a really great memoir read by the author, you have their voice in your ears. It's just better.
Yeah.
And different genres, for me, work better as audio. Like I'm always listening to something alongside things I'm reading, but I tend to listen to things that are more narrative, more plot-driven, things that are meant to be pretty pacey.
And I'm the exact opposite. Everything I listen to tends to be nonfiction because the narrative I want to be immersed in the actual words. Mm. And I think that that's the thing is knowing your own personal preferences and being okay with that. There's no guilt. Like if you like audio, go to audio.
Yeah, that counts. That's a book. That's a book you finished. I've read these articles about how scrolling on our phones and social media has kind of rewired people's brains, making it more difficult to just sit down with a book and read for long periods of time. How do you all make that time to read? Greg, how do you?
Well, I think it definitely is a muscle and a practice, and it does get easier, but it's making the time, making the space is important. So if I read in the morning before work, and it's usually I don't have that much time for it. Maybe it's just a half an hour, but I make sure that my phone is on the other side of the room, because when it's within reach, maybe there's something in the book that makes me want to look something up. And then the next thing I know, I'm just opening other apps. So if I just keep it out of reach, I don't reach for it, and I can get some more reading in, and I find that I immerse more deeply.
Yeah. What about you, Hillary? Is there a key to really? It sounds like you don't have any problem diving into a good book and staying there.
There was a lot of nodding over here while Greg was talking, because he's absolutely right. The minute you pick up your phone, it's like you're in a vortex and you're just going to get sucked in. And even if it's a good reason, like you're looking something up. But also, like, being okay with reading in small chunks. You don't need to sit down for an hour. Who has an hour, right? Like, but you have 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, and another 15 minutes here. And one of the ways to fit reading in, if you're getting lost in a narrative and you feel like you're losing the thread, but you know you only have those small bits, pick something shorter. Mm. Find short stories or essays or, something that is chopped up in short chapters. Mm. Genre fiction is really great for that. Like, find a way to get those small bits of reading to matter.
Yeah. I want to talk about your recommendations, but just real quick, do you have a tip for reading more deeply, even if reading more books isn't your goal, but you finish a book and then 10 days later can't remember what you read? Maybe you need to read more deeply. Do you have either of you have tips for that?
If by deep we mean reading and retaining, definitely for me, reading on paper is the most important thing. Reading digitally, I don't retain it to the same extent. So just kind of focusing and marking up the books, putting in a mark just on if there's a passage I want to remember. And then I find that after I've finished a book, if I flip right back through it and read just those things I've highlighted, so much of it's kind of reinforced.
Yeah, absolutely agree with all of that. And sometimes even just the act of, part of the reason I have a reading goal is I've been keeping track of the books that I read for the last 16 years. Like, I can go back for the last 16 years and look at every book I've read, the title and the author. Literally, that's all I'm writing down is the title and the author. But the act of writing that on paper in my handwriting somehow cements it in my brain.
Yeah.
And I know everyone might have a different trick, but there is science about the way that your brain is wired when you write, when you take notes physically, it makes it stick.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's get to the recommendations. Hillary, you had Margot's Got Money Troubles on your list. Tell us about this story and what you like about the book.
It is so absurd, but it's the absurdity that makes it real. So it's the story of Margot, who finds herself 20, a single mother who cannot make ends meet. Margot's got money troubles. And so she turns to an OnlyFans site with the help of her WWE, like World Wide Wrestling, veteran dad, creating these crazy storylines. And the book is just bananas, but it's funny and smart and really clever and also very well written. Before she became a single mother, she was in college in a creative writing class, and Margot is telling her story in a really creative way. It's short, it's funny. I think it's a great summer book.
Oh. Well, Greg, your recommendation, Beautyland, is also about a protagonist who kind of feels out of place in the world a little bit. Tell us about that book.
Yeah, literally out of place. This is a book by Marie-Helene Bertino, and it is about a young alien who is born as a human baby, and ostensibly they're on Earth to scout a new planet for their civilization. But what you really have is almost this anthropological look at humanity, as American humans, American society, because she is documenting what she's learning and sending it home via fax machine to her people, who are sort of like, they've got folks out, aliens out in other planets looking for a new home. And so you just have this like great way of sort of stepping back from all of the oddness of modern human life and seeing it through the eyes of not only an alien, but, you know, to her society there, she reads as neurodiverse. And to us, you can kind of think of the character that way. It's just a different way of seeing the world. And it's just lovely and charming and surprisingly, like, emotionally moving.
Yeah. Well, I think so many of us, especially as teenagers, feel like, am I an alien who doesn't belong here and on this planet?
And you grow up with her from a child through her teen years into her adulthood. And so yeah, you get through all those phases. So there's kind of something for everyone on that front too.
Yeah. Glad to hear there are still fax machines being used for something in this, in literature. Hillary, you have a genre mashup on your list, The Ministry of Time. What's that one about and what makes it so good?
So it's a sort of time travel, science fiction-y sort of book, but it's also part spy novel. There's a romance thread to it. I think it's best to go into it. I've had some people who tend to read romance that read it and the romance isn't enough for them. They didn't like it quite as much. It really, you've got to think of it kind of as a spy novel. So the premise is that modern day Britain has discovered time travel and they've brought people back to modern day London from other pieces, periods in time. And so you've got this fish out of water comedy and it quickly becomes clear that something is afoot. Mm. I've recommended it to a lot of different people and everyone who has read it has found something to like in it.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. Greg, you don't describe You Dreamed of Empires as a mashup, but you said it's nearly psychedelic historical fiction that's playful and political. It sounds like there's a lot going on with that book.
There is, but it's also a pretty tidy story. It's this this book by Alvaro Enrique, who's a Mexican writer, and it's translated by Natasha Wimmer, who is best known for translating Roberto Bolaño's books. So she's got a profile, and she's wonderful. But it's this reimagining of the moment in 1519 when the conquistador, Cortez, arrives to meet Tenochtitlan, to meet Moctezuma, the Aztec emperor, in Tenochtitlan, which is modern-day Mexico City. And one reviewer described it as an Aztec West Wing. Like you meet all these characters, but it's very political and there's sort of these power struggles, but also just this mundanity that you wouldn't expect. Like Moctezuma is depressed and he spends a lot of his time sleeping and taking psychedelics. So it gives the book this very psychedelic feel. And it's more like playful and surprising than you would expect. There's music from the 70s kind of pops in during the psychedelic moments. It's great. As historical fiction, it's really sort of transporting. You put yourself sort of into a new culture for you. And then also you are seeing the conquistadors arrive in a new culture. So it's kind of double layers of difference. It's wonderful, though. It's a lot more fun than it would seem.
Yeah. You also, Greg, have Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone as a recommendation, mm-hmm. which you described as a fun meta murder mystery. Say more.
Well, so I do want to say we talked about audiobooks. This is one that I listened to, and it's set in Australia, and it's just got this great, charming narrator, and it's written in the first person, so that adds to the narration. But it is basically a classic locked room murder mystery that takes place on a ski resort during a storm. And the narrator is someone who writes guides for writers of murder mysteries. So he's got all these rules for how a classic murder mystery would go. And so while he is within this murder mystery, he's saying, well, if this was really a classic murder mystery, we wouldn't be able to do that. That would be breaking the rules. This would never happen. This is cheating. And that's the meta aspect, because you're thinking about, it's like a writer thinking about living through a murder mystery that is familiar from writing. But it's a lot of fun and super clever. It's got vibes of like Clue and Knives Out, those kinds of things. And this is one that's the first one in a series. The second one has already come out and it's another one that's very writerly. That one is called Everyone on This Train is a Suspect. And it is a convention of crime writers that is happening. They're on a train. So another locked room thing that is, again, very writerly and fun.
Yeah. Marie emails, my father kept a book on him and would often read in line at the post office, at the grocery store, while waiting for us as we shop for clothes. I love a recommendation. I am so sad about the previous segment on book banning. More access, not less. Okay, Hillary, talk about Say Hello to My Little Friend, which you said is the most Florida book. Those are very strong words.
Well, I lived in Florida for a long time, and so the author, Janine Capo-Cruzet, is from Florida, so you can definitely tell her affection for the state and its oddities. But this book is a mashup of Moby Dick and Scarface, which sounds impossible, and yet she pulls it off. There are two main characters. One is, when you meet him, Ishmael Reyes, call me Izzy. There's the Moby Dick. He is a young man who is making his living as a pit bull impersonator in Miami. And when we meet him, he gets a cease and desist notice saying he can no longer do that from Pitbull's lawyers. So he has to shift gears. That's where we find him. And the other main character is a killer whale named Lolita, who is trapped in the Miami Seaquarium. And their stories intersect. And I don't want to say anything else, but I really appreciate books that surprise me because, you know, I've always been a big reader. And then for my job, I read even more. Greg and I were talking before this segment. This is, you know, sort of a hazard of our job is that we tend to know where things are going in books, right?
You've seen this play before.
Yes, which is, you know, not a bad thing necessarily. So that can be really pleasurable still. But when I find a book that does something truly surprising, it automatically makes it a favorite.
Yeah. We got an email from Brenda. Brenda writes, I am loving your conversation about books and reading. I'm one of those people who both read physical books and listen to audiobooks. One of my favorite audiobooks I listened to during that time was an older recording of Charlotte's Web, aww, read by E.B. White himself.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, that's terrific. Greg, you have State of Paradise on your list, another very Florida book. What's that story about?
Yeah, so this one, Hillary and I had exchanged lists, and when she had her Florida book on there, I thought we should just double down on Florida. Laura Vandenberg, she writes playful, kind of speculative stuff, and this is one that is, you could call it speculative autofiction. There are some elements that are definitely her life. It is about a woman who is a ghostwriter for a very popular thriller writer, maybe modeled after James Patterson, and she moves home to Florida during the pandemic with her husband. And so there are these elements that are very familiar, and it's kind of a small story in that sense. She's home with her family during the pandemic, but then it starts kind of getting weirder and bigger. In this story, there's a tech company that has developed these virtual reality headsets that they get the government to let them distribute to people during the pandemic to help people relax and meditate. But people become addicted to those, and then the people that are addicted start disappearing. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of this wacky story where it starts tying into the stories that famous thriller writer had written. And so it's almost like a mystery she's trying to figure out. It's very odd, but very Florida, very environmental, very sweaty. and just, it's a really kind of immersive, odd, compelling short book.
Oh, if you aren't going to Florida this summer, you've got some good books you can read and feel like you're there. Hillary, you tend to include short stories or essays in your recommended reading list. This time it's Bite by Bite. Tell us about that one.
So these are just lovely little essays about food and family. The author has gone through her own memories of food. So each essay is like mango or strawberries or whatever. And then it's her own memories around that particular food. No essay is longer than like maybe 3 or 4 pages. So I talk about reading in those short moments. This is like perfect. You can do a couple essays with your cup of coffee in the morning, right? And they're just lovely. I know I've used that word, but they because somehow the trick is, as she's writing her own specific memories around this food, it evokes your specific memories. And so it's sweet without being treacly, and it leaves you feeling, you know, warm and fuzzy, and also accomplished because you can read a few of them in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
She's a poet.
Yes.
And so she has that economy of language that allows her to do so much in these short pieces. That one I second.
Yeah, and she also is part of this sort of constellation of writers. So if you are someone who reads a lot, you are going to recognize some of the names that pop up in her writing.
Oh, fun. Well, we're running out of time. I want to let our listeners know that all of your recommendations are on our website. So we didn't get to all of them, but they're all listed on there on our website, wvxu.org. Just real quickly, Greg, what are you reading now?
Right now, I just this morning finished The History of the Notebook, which is fascinating. It's going to be coming out later this year that I'm pretty excited about.
Well, how about you, Hillary?
Just
pick one. You're probably reading 16 things.
Yes. I've got a book called Piglet that I've been working through, which is making me hungry, so I keep putting it down.
That's fair. Well, I've been talking with the Mercantile Library book advisor, Hillary Copsey, and Downbound Books owner, Gregory Kornbluh. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you,
Lucy. Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.